v. Knopf. Mr. Luzak.
May it please the Court, Jason Luzak appearing from Gimbel, Riley, Guerin & Brown on behalf of the defendant appellant, Randall Knopf. Mr. Knopf is appealing his sentence and conviction, excuse me, not his sentence, but his conviction of one count of possession of child pornography and one count of attempted child enticement. Mr. Knopf was convicted of those two counts after a week and a half long jury trial in which the government spent nearly a quarter of the time on 404B other acts evidence.
Well, what was his defense?
Your Honor, his defense was one of intent and knowledge as far as...
More concrete. So what did he argue, or his lawyer argue?
His argument was that he did not believe that the person that he was meeting and chatting with was a minor, a person under 18 years old.
So why isn't the 404B evidence on point?
Your Honor, the 404B evidence may be on point. Our argument is that it is not. However, the real error was that the court under the Shishloka case, which was recently decided, did not articulate the reasons why under 403 the evidence was not unfairly prejudicial. And in this case, the evidence was unfairly prejudicial to the defendant because unlike Shishloka, unlike the defendant in Zahersky, Mr. Knopf had no allegations of prior sexual assaults of abuse of children or effectively the 404B evidence was just merely chats. And there was no proof that the people that he was chatting with were in fact minors. And that gets into an issue of whether the evidence is probative, because under the first, under the middle two prongs of the 404B analysis, which really goes to relevancy, these chats were very attenuated and could have been, it could have been enacting out in a fantasy world, which this court has found that the internet allows somebody to be somebody who they are not, and does not necessarily connote that words enough are a bad act. And if that, really the error was not necessarily procedural, but the fact that he did not articulate the essentially what the prejudicial nature was of the evidence, and it was unfairly prejudicial because the evidence was expansive and it was interwoven within the entire trial. Over the 6.5 days of trial, the government spent lots of time, approximately 23%, which we cited in our reply brief, on the issues of these other chats. And unlike Zahersky, where there would be more probative value, because what's more probative than an act of prior sexual abuse of a child, which the actual person was brought in and testified, unlike those cases, we don't know who the people were in the chats. We don't know who was on the other end. And that creates a very high danger of unfair prejudice whenever this huge mound of information is dumped.
But isn't it harmless? I mean, he did try to verify that the police officer was a child by talking to her on the phone, and she disguises her voice and so on. So isn't that compelling evidence that he really was interested in meeting an underage girl?
Well, Your Honor, it's difficult to look at this case in a vacuum from where all of the other acts evidence comes in, because that really tipped the scale.
No, I don't understand. Suppose we had no other acts evidence. We just had the recordings by the police officer here. And it seems to me the business where he demands to speak to her so that he will have evidence that she isn't pretending to be a child. Isn't that conclusive? I mean, what's the defense to that?
Your Honor, the defense is one of intent and knowledge. And
don't use just empty words like that. What does he say when the government says, "Look, he was concerned that she might not be actually a child, so he demands to speak to her, and she disguises her voice, and he's satisfied that she's a child." Now, what does he say? What does his lawyer say in response to that?
Well, Your Honor, the facts of this case, essentially...
What does his lawyer say in response to that?
His lawyer says that there was a statement that was taken when he was arrested in the parking lot of Walgreens where...
What does the lawyer say about this specific incident where he speaks to her over the phone and she disguises her voice?
The lawyer says that, pursuant to Gladish, communications cannot be...
This is not about cases. This is about... The question, his defense, you said at the beginning, was that he didn't think that she was a child, and he's just, you know, as you say, it is true. These people go on the internet and they pretend to be a different sex. That's the usual one, but whatever they do. But doesn't the? But if he didn't think she was a child, why did he? And didn't want to be dealing with it, didn't want to meet a child, why would he have this conversation with her designed to ascertain that she is a child? And then when he finds out that she is, then he goes ahead and obviously was intending to meet her. So what does his lawyer say to that?
Well, the response is that the recordings that were played in court, when they are heard, there could be a question as to whether it was a minor or not, because it was the undercover officer who basically was bending over, creating an issue with her diaphragm, trying to speak in a very high-pitched voice. And that could create a curiosity, which is exactly what Mr. Knopf said as he was going to his car to leave the Walgreens parking lot where this meet was set up. And whenever that evidence is viewed along with all of the mounds of 404B evidence that was entered into without articulating the reasons why this evidence was not unfairly prejudicial, creates an issue where it's very difficult to determine whether it was harmless error. And we would argue that it's not harmless error because it pervaded the whole trial. It was interwoven within the context of
all these... Well, if she had spoken in an adult voice, what would he have done?
Probably the same thing. I mean, and it was curiosity is what he said drove him there to see who was there. Because people do this all the time. And it is commonplace that people act like different people online in these chat rooms. And people can be who they want. And it created a curiosity for him. It does not necessarily mean that he was traveling to that place with the intent and the knowledge that he was meeting a minor and that he was going to commit a sexual act with the minor. And so when all of the evidence is viewed, it's impossible to determine and take out that quarter or 23% of the time that was spent on this evidence when it was unfairly prejudicial, especially when considering...
He was hoping to meet an adult?
I think he did not know who he was going to meet. He thought it was going to be an adult, or as far as it goes with the intent element, if he went there with the intent, even traveling with the intent, thinking that I'm driven here by curiosity, not by a desire to commit a sexual act with a minor, that is a defense to the child enticement charge. But the other acts and the other evidence that was admitted is not very probative, given the fact that the evidence does not show a sexual interest in minors. It merely shows an interest in chatting with people online who may purport to be minors, who may purport to be underage girls or boys. There's no common thread here that really connects the things and make them similar enough to allow this evidence in. And that goes to the analysis of it. I see that I'm running into my rebuttal time. if I may reserve.
Yeah, sure.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Luzak. Mr. Koenig?
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I represent the United States in this appeal. I was co-counsel in Mr. Knope's trial. We're asking,
so what of this 404B evidence, what is the one you'd pick out as most probative of something?
Well, many of the chats.
I'm asking for
some
one.
That come immediately to mind would be Paltry 40 and Baseball Dude, but I think there were several others.
I want one, and I want you to explain what it is and what its probative significance is.
You were asking my opposing counsel earlier about this issue of fantasy.
I'm asking you a very simple question. I want you to answer my question, then you can say whatever else you want to say.
The chats with Paltry 40, which are in our appendix, involve a chat between the defendant and another individual that reference earlier chats with a person called Baseball Dude, who represented he was a 15-year-old boy, okay? And the conversation that occurs here is all about some guy told me he was 15 and he wants to hook up.
What page is this?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is Government Appendix 39.
Is this in your brief or in a separate?
Separately bound appendix, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Separately bound appendix.
Separate, okay. All right, so go ahead, explain it.
The Paltry says, really, I take it he wasn't 15. Mr. Knope, I don't know. I'm not going to find out. It's not worth it. Paltry says, most likely some guy faking to be a teen. Mr. Knope, that's my guess. Mr. Knope, or some desperate cop trying to make himself a name. This goes directly to your line of questioning about fantasy on the internet. Mr. Knope was keenly aware of that phenomena, adults posing as children, people of different sexes posing as the other sex, undercover police officers posing as children, and even robotic computer programs generating chat online, which is called a bot, as you probably
know.
A bot, a B-O-T.
A bot, oh, okay.
And so a lot of the chats, he's bringing up questions like this that go precisely to the issue of, am I talking with a real person? And they show that, in fact, that's what he was interested in. And that's why, since...
So you say it's showing he's trying to find a real person.
Yes, Your Honor.
A real child, a real minor. Yeah.
And that was very much the defense in this case, as Mr. Luzak acknowledged, and as Mr. Galasto emphasized in his opening and closing.
Did he attempt in any of these others, Paltry or Baseball or whatever, to meet with that person, or was it all just chat, as you put it? For instance, this discussion about the it could be a police officer and that sort of thing, acknowledging that he's well aware of this type of stuff going on. I don't know how he couldn't be. We've had so many cases on it, but this is what always amazes me when they do this. But in a particular case we have here, are you trying to say that he would have been just as expecting it when he made this trip to meet a police officer?
No, my argument is rather that he was trying to weed out that possibility.
Yeah.
And when he went there, why would he have gone there if he thought that this person was an adult or a police officer?
I don't think I know.
So.
That's a good question. And these others, are you saying that they're not similar because he didn't attempt to meet? That wouldn't be 404B? That wouldn't show intent now?
I'm sorry, I don't quite follow the question, Your Honor.
Well, you're objecting to all this other, these other chats that they brought in. 404B evidence, whatever you named them, Paltry, Baseball, and several others. And you're objecting to that because that's too prejudicial.
No, we were in favor.
I'm sorry, you think that's...
He's the government. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right.
He's objecting to that. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. What would he be expecting under their theory? What else could he be expecting besides meeting up with somebody else?
Well, Mr. Knope did not testify at his trial. His entire statement to the police came in, and at least from the government's perspective, the statement sort of began with some inculpatory comments, and then there was a lot of backpedaling over the course of the interview. And he ended up saying things along the lines of, I didn't think this was an adult. I didn't think this was a child. I was curious. Curiosity killed the cat, and so forth. And that became essentially his trial defense.
Were any of the others a mention of an attempt or a refusal to meet? That's what I'm really looking for here.
I believe the only one where there were very concrete discussions of where to meet were the chats with Baseball Dude, and there was they talked about a park and so forth.
Yeah.
There may have been some less concrete references to finding a hotel in the Spoiled Brat chats as well.
But this one was, I guess it's the only one where there was actually an attempt to meet, where they actually showed
Well,
up.
There were the chats in 2005, which, believe it or not, came out of a different undercover operation that also snagged Mr. Knope. And that progressed as far as Mr. Knope driving around in a vehicle in Milwaukee looking for the Walgreens. The whole thing kind of fell apart because there was a lot of confusion about where they were supposed to meet. But he went very far along in those chats in terms of meeting or making a plan to meet. Those are the.
Is the relevance of this 404B evidence that it shows that it shows not that Knope is inhabiting purely a fantasy world, but that he wants to be very careful to weed out phonies and police officers, and because he really does want to meet a minor, but he doesn't want to be entrapped and so on and so forth. So this shows his care in weeding out, and in this case, I guess critically because of the telephone conversation, he was able to assure himself that he was dealing with a minor, so he goes ahead.
Yes.
That's essentially what you're...
Well, it seems to me that in making decisions about 404B, the trial judge might have been better advised to just allow in the one incident with Baseball Dude, because in that instance, he actually did take some additional action besides chatting.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what do you make of the argument that this other stuff was really just there to make the defendant look worse?
Well, it wasn't offered for that purpose. It was offered to, if you marry up the chats, which demonstrate an interest in sexual activity with young people, and the chats that show how eager he is to weed out undercover law enforcement or phonies or whatever, I think you have to put those together. That's our argument, is that together they show what he was interested in.
Did I read where there were a number of others that you did not include?
That is certainly true, Your Honor, yes. I'm not sure if it's relevant legally, but it's true.
Well, I just saw it somewhere in your brief, I guess. It was somewhere in your brief?
Yes.
The judge said something.
And then there were also some other 404B items that Judge Clevert did not allow into evidence. Different character. They were photographs that were found in Mr. Knope's residence.
These defenses that we see when the defendant argues that, oh, he's, you know, just thought it was play and so on, didn't really intend anything. Are these people ever acquitted? Are juries ever impressed by that kind of defense?
Your Honor, this is the first case of its kind that ever went to trial in our district, so I'm not aware
really?
Of too many,
huh.
though.
Huh. Okay.
Well, they submitted that Byrd case, which, of course, I think there was also a testimony, wasn't there? The Byrd case
Your Honor.
You submitted that one, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor. It was decided earlier this week.
Didn't somebody testify in that one?
I don't recall. Certainly in the Cizulka case, which I'd like to talk about real quickly, There was a live witness who testified that she'd been sexually assaulted by the defendant. And frankly, 404B evidence doesn't get more prejudicial than that. And that's one of the points I wanted to raise, because Cizulka, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, is their strongest case that the defense has. But it is distinguishable, I think, for a couple of reasons. I just finished my response. First of all, the qualitatively and quantitatively, the 404B was much more prejudicial. You also had what the court regarded as a fairly weak direct evidence of guilt, such that the perception was the government was trying to compensate by throwing in mountains of 404B. That was not the case here. We had a strong case against Mr. Knope, and even if the court determines for whatever reason there was an abuse of discretion, the harmless error should save conviction here.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Luzak, anything further?
Your Honor, I would just like to briefly touch on the Cizulka, the attempt to distinguish Cizulka. What can be more probative of someone's sexual interest in children than a prior act of sexual assault of a child when the child is brought in? It's extremely probative evidence. It's very prejudicial, but in this case, the unfair prejudice is actually greater, because there is this fog of, if those other chats were attempted to be used to provide the basis of charging somebody with a crime, they would not hold up. There was no substantial step. There doesn't have to be, but it's important when considering.
But what it shows is that he screens the people he talks to and chats with in an effort to identify the real minor, which he did in this case by the phone conversation.
But, Your Honor, there's no evidence that the government provided who these people actually were, or that any actual...
All the relevance is that he's suspicious of the people he meets in the chat room, and he doesn't want to meet them in person until he's verified that they're... young girls. And that's what he did by his phone conversation with the police officer.
Well, the conversation with Baseball Dude and Paltry 40, that involved what we believe was not a similar incident, because it was a minor, it was a 15-year, somebody who was purporting to be a 15-year-old boy. And the other chats that were...
Wait a second, what difference does it make whether he's bisexual or heterosexual?
It probably doesn't make any difference, but it does not change the fact that the evidence was admitted without articulating on the record. That is something that does not appear in the record when the district court was admitting this evidence in, and that in and of itself is an abuse of discretion, which this court has found before, that the failure to articulate the reasons, especially given the fact that 403 is the most important catch-all of making sure that there is not an abuse of putting in unfairly prejudicial evidence, particularly 404B evidence that is inherently unfairly prejudicial.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Luzak. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts.
Thank you.
Quiet.